Instead of owls, Frost's character gets his response in the form of a buck, which appears, interestingly, first not as a buck, but as an it. Line 10, it was the embodiment. Almost like what Freud would call the id. It's everything one cannot name. Not only is the thing unspecified for a while, but it also comes as a surprise since it's not human. This is what the man had wanted. In fact, humanity itself is surprisingly irrelevant throughout the poem. We have moved from voice to sight. And most striking of all, I think, is the fact that the buck appears in the form of a simile. As a great buck, it appeared. As a great buck, it powerfully appeared. So it is a buck, but Frost has taken the normal ways in which we use metaphor and simile and reverted the vehicle and the tenor. The word embodiment is the poem's longest word. Or I should say this, there are three words in the poem, embodiment, original, and additional, that have four syllables. And they are united, that combination of words, an original, additional embodiment. This is what the man wants. This is not, however, what he gets. It's not a body that appears. It's an embodiment, something different from a body. The notion of identity, like the notion of origin, has been blurred or complicated for us. We can't account for the buck. We can't account for its appearance, its destination. Where is it going? Why is it going there? Its apparent uninterest in or indifference to our lives. The buck is everything that is foreign, undomesticated. You might even say undomesticatable, unhuman, inhuman. Consider again the title, the most of it. What is that? Answer, not much. And the poem ends with that wonderful, understated, four-word, monosyllabic anticlimax. And that was all. It's a terribly cold poem. This poem and this buck lead us to Elizabeth Bishop, a wonderful poem of hers from her last volume, Geography 3, the book in which One Art also appears, called The Moose. And it's a poem which is like one of those Wordsworthian encounter poems that we've looked at, I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud or The Solitary Reaper. It's a poem written in short lines, and it's about a bus ride. The first three quarters of the poem detail a bus ride from Nova Scotia to Boston. The first sentence of the poem, as befits the subject, is 36 lines long, a long, wandering, spaced-out kind of sentence. And Bishop describes, in the first three quarters of the poem, the bus ride from Canada down into the forests of New Brunswick, leaving at dusk, heading westward, heading south, picking up people along the way. She's viewing the landscape, the surround. She gives us some sense of geography. She settles into her seat, and as darkness comes, she sort of falls asleep into a kind of half-consciousness, dreaming, half-dreamingly overhearing conversations from the other passengers, snippets of conversation, things that don't apply to her, but she can understand in some ways their relevance. Everyone, in fact, on the bus is beginning to doze off, and all of a sudden something happens. This is the climax of the poem. Significantly, the poem's setting involves a group. It's a bunch of strangers on a bus. Notice how this is different from the normal encounter poem you might have in Frost or Wordsworth, where there's a solitary speaker and a solitary person confronting something in nature. Bishop has a much keener sense of community than Wordsworth or Frost does. But notice she's also, though she's part of a group, she's also a lone traveler on the bus. She's overhearing, not participating, she's overhearing the conversations of her fellow travelers. The poem is, therefore, at least in part, a consideration, a dramatization, a deliberation about those things that unite us and those things that separate people from one another. And the poem is a response both to Wordsworth and to Frost. Here is what happens at the end of the poem. The bus jolts to a halt and turns off its lights.